Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the false start of free speech. We thought we had free speech. We thought we had a First Amendment. That's what we thought, but seems no, we don't. So we better be mindful of voice. We better choose our words very carefully. So I'm going to choose my words very carefully. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The operator is standing by. All right, we've got Paul Stevenson. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Patrick, and you know, just so you know, I had to choose my words carefully. Just saying.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That's Alexander Mercurius. I was listening to him a little while ago, and he was talking about a New York Times article that was calling the Ukraine war a proxy war, and I guess indicating it wasn't going so well. I was talking to an old friend of mine last night, and he was saying, you know, you were right all along about Ukraine. And I was thinking, what did I tell this guy about Ukraine? But I guess meaning that that the Ukrainians weren't going to win, which I don't think is such a news flash, but I guess if you're in Normie land and you're hearing Ukraine's going to win. And he was... He's just a lifelong Republican. He's my lifelong Republican friend. And I guess because Trump is saying that it's not going well for Ukraine, maybe that's the news flash for him. But, you know, I did mention to him, I said, well, you know, it's not just that Ukraine's not going to win, but Vladimir Putin, he's actually a good guy. He's the good guy. And he was like, what? He's the good guy? Like, yeah. He's the good guy. What do you mean? I said, he is the leader that lifelong Republicans would, he's the type of person lifelong Republicans would have wanted their entire lives. Socially conservative, fiscally conservative, non-interventionist. And I had to explain to him how, in fact, he was so reluctant to get into this war that it was eight years the Ukrainians were shelling and killing these Russians who wanted nothing more than to join Russia. He wouldn't let them join Russia until finally the Americans and Ukrainians pushed it too far. I'd explain this to him because he's a good guy, but he's a normie. And I think it was kind of overwhelming for him. Too much information all at once. But that's where we are. So what do you think?
Well, it's a shock to the system for people like that if they're living in a certain sort of mindset, believing all the propaganda. It's a real shock for them if you say something like that. Well, he's a good guy. They're like, what? He's the most evil man in the world, I thought. But, you know, you mentioned there that he waited 8 years. I mean, of course, Putin is portrayed, like we've spoken about many a time, as some sort of absolute maniac, you know, and really he's very reserved. In fact, the criticism, as we've spoken about before in Russia, is that he's not aggressive enough. And he also had a fair bit of criticism within Russia for delaying that intervention. Because, like you said, the shelling of the Donbass was going on for 8 years. And there was a lot of discontent in Russia that Putin was not acting sooner, you know. So far from him being this, you know, irrational, impulsive maniac, he's very measured to the point that he actually, you know, it causes some frustration within more hardliners in Russia. It still remains to be seen, though, how they're going to wrap all this up. They have this problem with Zelensky and his little buddies there in Kiev. I'm not really sure how they're going to sort that out. Meanwhile, Trump was expressing some irritation at Putin for, you know, what was he upset about? Because he gave that just at the end of our show last week, for my show on Friday, I mentioned that Putin addressed, I think it was in a nuclear submarine or something, or a submarine with hypersonic weapons on it. And, you know, he basically said that the time is coming soon, more or less, that he's going to finish them off, the Ukrainians. And he said some other things which I think it rubbed Trump up the wrong way. And Trump was saying maybe we need a bit more sanctions on Russia or something. I don't know. But the whole thing is just a mess, really. You know, I mean, nothing is really working. You know, in the Middle East, whatever ceasefire, as usual, Israel broke that, and that's all spectacularly collapsed as usual. And meanwhile, you know, the Ukrainians have been shelling energy facilities. And then when the Russians retaliate, I don't even know if they have hit energy, plants or whatever. But then, you know, the Ukrainians, they break the ceasefire, and then the Russians retaliate and hit something. And then they blame the Russians for retaliating. So the Ukrainians don't want to end this war. And I don't think it's strategically in Russia's interest to end it now either, you know? So it's, meanwhile, the Europeans are going crazy
I just want to clarify. I think you mean the Ukrainian leadership, the current Ukrainian leadership doesn't want to end the war.
Yeah, exactly. Hold on a second. Big crowd of people walking past. I don't know where the hell they're coming from. Hold on. What the hell? Must be like a school trip or something.
Yeah.
Come along, guys. Come along. That's it.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah, the leadership in Ukraine, they don't want it. And more people seem to be of the thought that, you know, Zelensky is basically caught between a rock and a hard place, really, because even if he wanted to broker a peace, you know, his life might be in jeopardy, really, you know, because I guess it's these Azov guys in the right sector and some of these characters in Kiev. And this is what I mean. I mean, this whole denazification thing, how do you do that? I mean, you can demilitarize something, but I mean, if these guys get a certain ideology, you know, this is going to turn into a paramilitary guerrilla thing, which will go on and on. And meanwhile, the Europeans are actually apparently on a war footing. Now, they're not going to be able to go to war with Russia next week or even next year, but maybe in 5 or 6 years' time they are. I mean, this seems to be the plan. It's just like these people are crazy. Anyway, hopefully these people will get rid of these people.
Yeah, denazification is a very weird word. I think it's partly rhetoric, but you know you do have these right sector people, the Azov Battalion people, who do have a particular emotional attachment to certain imagery from decades past. They do exist, and they don't run the country, but. But I do think it's fair to say that they have some influence. And the thing about Zelensky and his team is, were they to end the war, the rationale for them being leaders collapses. There's no rationale for them continuing in office. They will have led the country into a disastrous war that they will have lost, because they're losing it. They're losing it. So once they acknowledge that they're losing the war and that they're giving up territory, what was the sacrifice of those hundreds of thousands of soldiers? What was their sacrifice?
You would think that they would be interested in making a deal. Surely they can see the writings on the wall. If the longer this goes, the more men die, the more territory they lose. You know, I mean, Russia probably, I heard someone was saying, used the term strategic procrastination. In other words, Putin, because they're winning the war, do they really want to be making a deal with the unscrupulous, untrustworthy, duplicitous West when they can just, like, you know, when they've already invested so much, you know, in the war financially and in terms of manpower and losses? You know, I think there is also pressure on Putin to go and take Odessa and, you know, just to keep going. You know, because, you know, what's the choice? Make a deal with the duplicitous West. It probably won't be worth the paper it's written on. This is what Trump's irritated by. Putin basically said to these guys, obviously it was being filmed, so he knew the whole world would be listening. But he basically said, what's the point in making a deal with Zelensky? He is... He's illegitimate, and then what will happen is there'll be a new leader come in there, and then you know, and then he'll go to the new people to talk about, you know, honoring the agreement, and they'll say, well, I didn't make the agreement. I mean, it's not worth anything. That was his take on the whole thing, you know, that it's just not going to be worth anything. He's not legitimate. It's not going to stand up. And then Trump got irritated by that, basically. Because Trump, you see, wants a deal, and he wants a deal quickly, because I think he wants to, you know, focus on Iran. And I think if he thinks he gets a deal with Russia, that he can sweeten the Russians and say, you know, we've looked after you here. We've, like, you know, given you everything you want. Just stay out of the way when we have to do what we want to do with Iran. I think that's what's going on, you know? And so Trump's getting very frustrated because all these deals and all these threats, no one's really listening to him. It's kind of weird. You know, he's running about, he's getting throwing his weight around, and the Russians are ignoring him, the Ukrainians are ignoring him, the Middle East is, well, you know, he just does what he's told by Benjamin Netanyahu. And the Europeans are ignoring him. The Europeans are, you know, they're going in a completely different direction from, you know, Trump wanting to establish some peace and get a deal going with Ukraine and Russia, you know? It's like no one's listening to him.
Well, you know, I think this is really a great example of why realism, that, you know, that Mercuris is always talking about realism. He has John Mearsheimer on. John Mearsheimer is associated with the school of thought, the paradigm in international relations known as realism. And Mercuris just seems to think it means being realistic. That's all realism is being realistic. Realism, the school of realism, has some basic assumptions. One is that states, they have interests, they have national interests, and they pursue those national interests, and that the states are the only units in the system worth considering, and that the various units in the system, the various states in the system, act rationally. These are assumptions, and they're false. And this is why, you know, John Mearsheimer really, like, he, you know, he was asked why by Glenn Diesing once why the Germans were doing such and such, because it's clearly not in their national interest. And he just said, I don't have an answer for that, because you can't explain so much of this with realism. Well, first of all, I mean, the first thing is that if you've got Jews who have captured these societies, and the Jewish leadership in the United States has no particular loyalty to the United States any more than they had when they were running Weimar Germany, or when they were running Bolshevik Russia. They didn't have any particular loyalty to those states when Jews were running oligarch era 1990s Russia. They didn't have any particular loyalty to the Russian state, to the Russian people, to the Russian nation. And, you know, when Putin took away their power, they had no problem just moving off. They moved off to England. They moved to America. They moved to Israel. They had no loyalty. So if the country's run by people who don't have any connection to the state or to the nation, then they're not going to be rationally pursuing the interests of that state or that nation. But, you know, so when you look at various different groups that matter to a decision maker, if you're Donald Trump, you're considering, well, what's your interest if you're Donald Trump? Is it necessarily what's best for the American people? No, I mean, really, I mean, he's thinking of what's best for Donald Trump, and Zelensky is thinking of what's best for Zelensky, and Netanyahu's thinking of what's best for Netanyahu. And so Donald Trump, he has to take into consideration the donor class, the Jews who've given him all this money, and the Jews who also successfully hamstrung him during his first term. So he has to consider them. But, you know, he considers his own base, which right now has never been larger, and his own base, which is very low info. They really don't know what's going on. And, you know, he wants to portray himself to his base as a tough guy who gets things done because people are afraid of him, because people respect him and are afraid of him. And so he strikes all these postures
it's all very cringe.
It is very cringe. But, you know, the sad fact is, as Andrew Anglin has pointed out, don't be surprised when peasants act like peasants. And the MAGApedes are peasants, and they're low info, and they like Donald Trump because they see him as a tough guy. They see him as kind of, you know, what they would like to think of themselves at. But the fact of the matter is, Donald Trump, he can strike all the poses he wants, but he's not going to be able to bend Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping to his will. He's not going to be able to bend the Iranian government, or even the Houthis of Yemen. He can't bend them to his will.
Exactly. And I mean, I think Trump has really failed to grasp in any serious way that the world has changed, even in the last 4 years, you know. And he seems to think that, you know, he's the biggest guy in the playground, and he's not anymore. He's just and you've got Russia and China and Iran who have all become tight-knit. You've got Russia, which is very self-dependent now, has adapted to the point where they have no dependence on anything European or American. They've adapted to the sanctions, and they're in a new reality now. And from Putin's just like, you guys have got nothing. You've got no leverage on me. You know, it's like you maybe had 5, 6, 7 years ago, but, you know, we're self-sufficient now. I mean, what do we need from you guys? Nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, if you wanted to remove the sanctions, great, but it's not a deal breaker. It's not like Russia's going to collapse, you know. So they've adapted to it. They're closer to China. They've seen, you know, they can read the weather that's coming, and they know, you know, that the Americans have got, you know, their eyes on China and Iran for Israel. And they've all kind of coalesced, and, you know, for their own interest, survival and thrival. Is that a word? Thrival? Sir, thrival?
Yeah. Yeah, they're thriving.
Anyway, you know, yeah, not just to survive, but to thrive. And so I think Trump is very frustrated that, like I said, no one really seems to be listening to him too much. You know, they're just cracking on. You see, Trump just thinks that, I'm Donald Trump, I'm the president of the United States, and, you know, I'm coming into the office, I'm a big tough guy, and when I say jump, the whole world's going to jump. Xi Jinping is going to go, oh, Trump, what am I going to do? And Putin's sitting there going to bed every night trembling. You know, there's people in the UK think that, oh, you know, if Trump had been the president, there's no way Putin would have invaded Donbass, because he'd have been scared of Trump. I mean, Vladimir Putin's not scared of anybody, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's very cautious. That being cautious isn't the same as being scared.
No, he's not reckless in any way.
Not reckless. And he's not aggressive. Right?
No.
He's, you know, and right now he's in a very strong position. So when Donald Trump was elected the first time in 2016, he had 4 years in office. And at that point, the United States was still the strongest country in the international system. The Chinese economy was clearly catching up, and perhaps its industrial base had already passed the United States. I'm not sure what year its industrial base passed the United States, but the United States was still the dominant country, the dominant power in the international system. But Trump wasn't allowed to exercise that power. Trump was stymied by the Jews, by the way. It was the Jews. It was the Jewish media. It was a Jewish-dominated judiciary, even if the judges who were issuing injunctions were often Orientals or other non-Jews. It was really a Jewish-influenced, Jewish-dominated judiciary. So he was hamstrung. Well, now he's in a stronger domestic position. And partly he's in a stronger domestic position because he made a Faustian deal with some of these Jews, which not only gave him lots of campaign funds, but it also...
Health Simple with Colorado Shilajit, fact bit number 2. In Ayurvedic pharmacology, Shilajit is the king, Raja Yoga Vahayana. Raja Yana is one of the comprehensive disciplines of Ayurveda. It comprises of specialized uses of herbal minerals to achieve the optimum state of health. Raja Yana is a path to achieve homeostasis and thus retarding the process of aging and the prevention of diseases. Shilajit stands alone as the king herbal mineral over all other earth-made substances. Within Raja Yana, Shilajit is the ultimate substance that improves quality of plasma and blood. Thus, it strengthens and promotes health to all tissues of the body. Legit Shilajit, like Colorado Shilajit, is as the literal Sanskrit translation implies. Shilajit is the conqueror of mountains and the destroyer of weakness.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Because he made a Faustian deal with some of these Jews, which not only gave him lots of campaign funds, but it also didn't eliminate, but it to an extent reduced the onslaught against him in the media, to an extent. And so he's in a stronger domestic position now. But of course, here we are 8 years later, and the position of the United States in the world is much weakened. And so, no, he can strike all these poses, and nobody really the United States isn't feared the way it was. I mean, I think the United States was feared for, you know, for reasons, for, I won't say for bad reasons, but for sad reasons. The United States was able to throw its weight around in the 90s, in the 2000s, under the George W. Bush. It was just throwing its weight around. Under Obama, it was, you know, overthrowing Gaddafi, ramming a dagger up his rear end, literally, and just doing everything with impunity.
But you know, you mentioned it earlier. You know, they are. I think the plan was to send a message to Iran by, you know, intimidating the Houthis, which is, you know, Ansar Allah is what we should call them, because the Houthis is a pejorative, but you know, most people know the Houthis, but. But embarrassingly, they're having trouble with the Houthis. I mean, how are they going to deal with Iran? I mean, they're supposed to be sending out this intimidating message to the Houthis. And they no sooner drop, you know, a dozen bombs on somewhere in Yemen, killing civilians mostly. And the next thing, you know, there's missiles being fired back at the ships. They seem to have it very, the Houthis seem to have it really in for the USS Harry Truman. They seem a bit obsessed with that. Is that an aircraft carrier? But, yes. You know, they keep hitting back. So they keep dropping, oh, here comes the might of the, you know, United States air power. And then the Houthis don't go away. They keep hitting, they keep hitting these tankers and these aircraft carriers or whatever they're hitting. So they can't even beat the, you know, the Houthis.
Yeah. They've taken out American aircraft.
Exactly. So it's proven to be an embarrassment more than anything else. So it seems like everything the Americans do, you know, it always seems to be backfiring. Their aggression's backfiring all the time, you know. Everything they've done that has caused the world to change in the last sort of 5 or 6 years with China and Russia and the BRICS and everything else, it's because of their aggression. It's because they've proven to be duplicitous when it comes to international agreements, and the Indians and the Brazilians are looking on and thinking, let's create a new world order, essentially, you know.
I don't use the term new world order because there's a lot of people out in RBN land who freak out when they hear that term. So I talk about a new international system.
I mean it in a literal sense. It's a new world order is emerging. Away from the kind of post World War II construct that was that needs to be dismantled, and I'm glad it has been dismantled. What was the other thing I was going to say to you? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the judge on the Here Comes the Judge show, on his, whether it was Monday shows or I guess it was his Monday shows, and he kept playing repeatedly playing this clip of my girlfriend Tulsi Gabbard in front of being grilled by some member of Congress who I guess is a little bit sharp, and he was asking her pointed questions and she was answering them with, you know, yeses and that is correct. And he was saying, you know, a couple of the questions were, you know, are the Houthis capable of striking American aircrafts? Yes. Have they in fact downed an aircraft? Yes. And the judge who was saying she looks like she'd rather be anywhere but what she is. And, you know, I looked down because, you know, I like looking at her, and she looked very forlorn. She looks like she misses me.
She did. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was interesting that she was, and, you know, I'm not exactly sure what was taken down where. Are they, is she referring to drones? Is she, you know, aircraft has a wide meaning, but yeah, in fact, the United States isn't doing well. And for people who haven't heard your show, your weekend show, you know, we were discussing this whole kerfuffle about the amateur hour in the group chat that had been set up
by
Mike Waltz. And it's getting a lot of press. A lot of people have been talking about it. And my take wasn't particularly unique. Lots of other people have been saying, yeah, that, you know, obviously it was amateur hour, but the real story here isn't that that they were talking on an insecure, a non-secured line. And this was allowing for this Jeffrey Goldberg, who is a horrible character. The judge didn't even seem to know who he was. Didn't know who he was. But not only was he invited in, but no, the real story is how callously.
Sweet Leilani, heavenly flower.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Howdy, cousins. This is RBN host Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, asking you to please support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every day, RBN's mission is to use our collective voices to spread truth and relevant information, to gain a deeper understanding of the adversary, and to gain knowledge for survival against the gradual erosion of the Republic. But in order to sustain this incredible communications network, RBN needs your financial contributions. To donate, visit republicbroadcasting.org, call 1-800-724-2719, or mail your donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
This Jeffrey Goldberg, who's a horrible character, the judge didn't even seem to know who he was, But not only was he invited in, but no, the real story is how callously they're talking about going to war with Yemen. For what? For what? And of course, I had made the point that, yeah, the people who organized this chat, yeah, they should be fired. I mean, really, the reason they should be fired is because they're pro war with Yemen, and they should be fired. And you know, I made the point that excuse me, I don't think Tulsi Gabbard should be fired. I think she should be disciplined, and personally, I would spank her. And I thought that was such a good line, I wanted to repeat it on my own show.
I'm sure you would, Patrick. But here's the other thing.
I probably wouldn't, but still, it's a good line.
Yeah, in that chat as well, J.D. Vance was a bit more measured. But J.D. Vance was talking about, well, you know, let the Europeans sort it out or whatever. Wasn't he talking about something like that? Because it's like it doesn't affect us, the trade going through here. And it's like, whoa, here. Wait a minute, J.D. The reason this is all happening in the first place, it's because the Houthis are attacking these ships in protest and in some kind of defense of the Palestinians, a situation which would not be possible without the United States blind support of Israel. So, yes, you are responsible. It's not, you know, the Europeans, well, these ships, you know, it's only 3% of U.S. businesses affected by these ships. The whole thing would not be taking place if it wasn't for the United States.
If you take away United States support of Israel, is Israel just will wilt away like a little, you know, flyer in winter, you know, because it just won't have the oxygen. You know, it'll be totally rounded on probably by its enemies without the United States. You know, it only does what it does because of the United States, you know? So, J.D. Vance just seemed to... I find it amazing. It's a shame that we didn't hear... You know, wouldn't it be cool if you heard somebody sort of bitching about the Israelis or something? You know, how long do we really suffer these people? We got to get rid of these people. I'm sick and tired of that Benjamin Netanyahu dictating to us all the time. We've got no business in the Middle East, you know? I'd love to have heard something like that, but there wasn't any mention of Israel.
There wasn't. No. Yeah, it's like J.D. Vance saying, this is why are we fighting the Europeans' battles for them or something like that. And of course, it's not the Europeans' battles. It's this is all about Israel. And it is happening amongst the backdrop of the I started off the show talking about the First Amendment, talking about freedom of speech, which no longer exists. And we've got Marco Rubio proudly proclaiming that, oh, at least 300, maybe a lot more than 300. He's already signed, you know, 300 orders for deportations of people, not even necessarily people who protested against the Israeli genocide, which is perfectly legal and perfectly admirable. But, you know, lately, this woman who had written an op-ed stating that the Israelis are committing genocide. She wrote an op-ed in her school newspaper, and then she was pounced on by six masked men and whisked away without, you know, and she's been whisked away, and now she's, I guess, facing deportation because she's not a U.S. citizen. Well,
yeah,
we're full of non-U.S. citizens, but if they're doing this to legal green card holders, Pam Bondi has already stated that she wants to send the FBI, even if she can't deport Americans, she wants to send the FBI to question them. And all sorts of violence happen. The FBI is notorious for killing dogs. I mean, I could go into some boomer posting right now about what would happen if they come to my house. I'm going to forego that. Everybody can fill in the blanks for themselves.
You never know. They might come for you.
They might. She came for Scott Ritter. And I'm just going to say, they came for Scott Ritter. And Scott Ritter, when he was recounting it, he was saying how the first thing he said is, let my wife get my dogs out of the house. That was the first thing he said, because it's true. This is not just like some sort of like fantasy thing. They do shoot people's dogs routinely. They do.
Why though?
Because they're pussies.
Yeah, well, I mean, this whole Israel thing, the judge actually played a clip of Netanyahu where he was talking about the vilification of Jews and anti-Semitism and, you know, what is wrong with these people? You know, we've got to defend civilization against barbarism, the usual stuff, the usual sort of outrage and sanctimony and righteous indignation coming from, you know, and calling the Palestinian Hamas rapists and mass murderers and just... Why won't that? Can't that guy just die of old age? I don't know. How old is he? Doesn't he have health problems? I mean,
he has
sick
health
looking
problems.
At this guy. He seems to have been in power for about 150 years.
He's younger than Trump. And yeah, his first term, I think, was 96 to 98, something like that. And lots of people blame him for the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, one of his predecessors. Yitzhak Rabin he was involved in negotiations with the Yasser Arafat. He and Arafat and his foreign minister, Simon Peres, who was his successor as prime minister, they shared a Nobel Peace Prize in the, what, like 94, something like that. And he was assassinated, and Netanyahu, who at the time was the leader of the Likud party, I believe he was the leader of the Likud party, and Rabin and Shimon Peres were Labor Party. And Netanyahu is widely criticized for having incited this kind of violence with his rhetoric. And so he was prime minister for a couple of years in the 90s. I think it was 96 to 98. And then he but he was always a major figure. He was, when Ariel Sharon came back as when he became prime minister, Netanyahu for at least a time, I believe, was his foreign minister. And so he's even when he wasn't in power, prime minister himself, for the most part, he has been either leader of the opposition or he has been, you know, a high ranking member of the cabinet. So but if he's been with the exception of what, a couple of years, he's been prime minister since 2009. So he's the longest serving ever Israeli prime minister. When you add it up, it's something like 17 years. But then plus he's always been important, even when he wasn't prime minister. And he's not that old.
Well,
he apparently has prostate cancer.
It's an abomination, really, the overreach that's happening there. I mean, you're having your, you know, your First Amendment eradicated by a foreign actor. You know, it's a foreign state. It's, you know, it's ostensibly a fifth column in the country. And I don't know what the solution to that is. You know, it's out of hand. It's out of control, basically. And I think there needs to be some people in America with some self-respect. But then it's the same in our country too, Patrick. You know, the Israeli lobby is very powerful in the UK too. They have to, like, thread this fine line because they import all these Muslims, of course. And you've got a lot of Palestinian, pro-Palestinian people down marching in London over the last year and things like that. But they have started to crack down on them more, you know. These people are people that we would normally have very little or little or nothing in common with, but you know, on that issue, we would be in agreement with them. One other, talking about abominations, you know, the great democracy-loving European Union have basically banned Marine Le Pen, who's the most popular leader in France and likely to be the next, you know, president of France, or was anyway. But they've banned her because of some sort of, I don't know, some financial underhand shenanigans, some embezzlement or something, which is just
what was explained by Mark Collett was apparently she is a member of the European Parliament. I wasn't aware that she was a MEP, but apparently she is. And so her staff, she gets a staff, and some of the staff that was not supposed to be assigned to do political work did some political work, which of course is probably universal. This is probably extremely widespread, but they, you know, they like, you show me the man, I'll show you the crime. And so this, now if my question, I haven't had time to research it yet because I've got to earn a living, but the crime and the, does she have to do time? I mean, Mark was saying that her time will probably be an ankle bracelet or something, but she's been convicted of something. Is this in a French court or are there European courts? What kind of court was this that it convicted her?
I don't know. I would need to research it myself, but you know, I'm not surprised. It's just a witch hunt because, and, you know, the irony is as well, she's really kind of moderated a lot of her positions, you know, but they try and paint her like, you know, like a sort of, I don't know, a European version of Putin or something. That's not a surprise at all. This is how the European Union operates. You know, you had that guy in Romania who was about to be elected, and they cancelled the election there. So, I mean, the European Union is incredibly authoritarian. And you know, and yet retarded people believe this nonsense that we're going around defeating Vladimir Putin because it's democracy against autocracies. I mean, the temerity of these people is staggering. I guess normies go along with it. There's enough stupid people around where they can get away with this stuff. They can't seem to recognize authoritarian regimes when they see one, you know, or when it's right in front of their face. But all, you know, all these, they you know, they blamed the Romanian thing. They blamed on, it was influenced by Russian TikTok videos. And, you know, now it's Marine Le Pen. Oh, there's embezzlement going on, you know? I mean, the European Union, I mean, it's so corrupt. The amount of embezzlement goes on in that organization, you know? I mean, where does all that money go? It's just all these slush funds, basically, you know? And then, Marine Le Pen gets it. I bet you when I do look into it, it'll probably be a fairly innocuous thing, completely amplified and exaggerated, just literally to stop her from taking power. Because
She would be friendly to Russia, by the way. I think her and Putin have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
And they can't have that because the Europeans want to war with Russia. And they can't have anybody coming into France, you know, who's going to want to, you know, have a more friendly relationship with Russia.
Okay, so I'm going to read and paraphrase from a BBC article on this. So there's no reprieve pending appeal. The bar on running for office is real and immediate. A 4-year sentence, of which 2 years will be suspended, will be on hold pending appeal. Well, okay, is there an appeal or is there not an appeal? But her political plans are dead. A consensus had almost established itself across France's political world that this ultimate sanction by the court could not, would not, in the end take place. Okay, it was not just Le Pen's followers who said it. Her enemies agreed, from Jean-Luc Mélenchon to the far-left Prime Minister François Bayrou, in the center, and Justice Minister Gérald Darmanin on the right. But they were all wrong. The judge said the law is the law. The law had, in fact, been recently toughened by the very politicians who are now complaining about its application to make the penalty for misuse of public funds very severe indeed. Well, said the judge in so many words, now let the politicians suck up their own medicine. So do they continue as if there's still...
Yeah, but it's all well and good, though, but it just happens. It's no surprise that the casualty of this is Marine Le Pen. It's not, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of embezzlement going on with Macron or whoever, and they'll just turn a blind eye to that. But Marine Le Pen, we gotcha, you know, we don't want you taking power. So she's going to be furious, I imagine.
She stormed out of the courts. There are millions, this is what she says, there are millions of French people who believe in me. For 30 years, I have been fighting against injustice.
This you is believe what in what?
Do right to the end. People, she's been fighting against injustice. Fighting words, but in reality, the future looks very unclear. Well, I don't know.
She's somewhat of a kind of a European Trump-type figure in a way, you know? Kind of a populist leader. Not, you know, hostile to Russia. So was the guy in Romania. But they keep finding ways of, you know, lowering the boom on any attempts to reshape the European political landscape, which would actually might actually, you know, represent the people. By the way, Patrick, I was listening to the show. We did, I'm changing the subject here, but I was listening to the show. I heard your singing at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
I was very impressed.
Very impressed. Oh my goodness. Well, that's Engelbert Poindexter.
I couldn't believe it. It took me a moment. I was like, is that Slattery singing? As that is.
Well, that can't say goodbye. I don't know if you know the original song, but it was very popular here in the 1970s. It was like kind of, I think it was the first song I ever slow danced to. There was a girl in my junior high school named Francesca. And it was the last dance of the year. And we slow danced. And I was like all excited. And I was thinking, okay, next, you know, all summer break, I was looking forward to seeing her in high school. Well, she must have moved away. I never saw her again. So that's it. Me and Francesca. Whatever happened.
Yeah, I'd never heard that song before. I'd never heard that song before. But it was very entertaining, Patrick, indeed. So anyway, yeah. Any attempts to sort of change the political and cultural landscape in Europe is met with disdain and corruption and underhand shenanigans like this. I mean, they really are an odious crowd. Von der Leyen, all these judges, these commissioners. I mean, the European Union is a total abomination, you know?
Yeah, and getting back to my conversation with my normie friend, who, you know, he's smart and he's actually... reasonably well connected. I mean, he's not very many degrees removed from famous politicians. I'm not going to get into details. The names will be withheld. Names are changed to protect the innocent. It got to the point where I was just saying, look, you know, we're. The United States has been taken over by Jews. And look, either Jews are going to destroy civilization or the Chinks are going to save it. And I stand with the Chinks. And I was getting all excited. He says, okay, well, we'll talk more later. I think maybe it was a little bit too much too fast. But
well, sometimes.
Hey. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you kind of like if you. Yeah.
We're coming up to the end of the show, but yeah, go ahead and express your thoughts before we wrap it up.
No, I was just going to say sometimes you do just want to tell people the truth, but they might not be able to bear it. But you can move the Overton window very quickly, like just saying things like you said, even though they might be shocked.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Get More Tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight 4 of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
They might not be able to bear it. But you can move the Overton window very quickly, like just saying things like you said, even though they might be shocked. It's kind of moved the Overton window in their own minds when you know.
Yeah, and ultimately, that's really going to be the main thing. So people are saying, oh, you can't vote your way out. Look what happens. We vote. But what's ultimately going to happen is the Overton window. I'm not a big fan of that concept, but I guess it's a good concept. It's going to get moved, and it's going to get moved by a lot of people saying things by people that we don't know about because, well, I'm older. You're not that much older, but people You know, like Stephen A. Smith or Candace Owens, a lot of blacks who don't have a filter, but have a platform, and they're going to be saying things. And the Jews are just going way too far, as they are prone to do. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Patrick.
And I'll be back again next time with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
This has got to be the saddest day of my life. I called you here today for a bit of bad news. I won't be able to shill for you anymore because of my integrity and the stupid things that you now say. We've been meeting here every day. And since this is our last day together, I want to hold you just one more time. When you turn and walk away, don't look back. I want to check out that booty and compare it to Nicki Minaj. Let's just kiss and say goodbye.
Saw you on Tucker's show today. That's such a stupid thing you say. Radical Islam is scaring you. Now you sound just like a Jew. I've been pushing you so long. I changed the first theme to the Aloha song. Come on, Tulsi, if you're gonna lie. Let's just kiss and say goodbye. You want to bomb the sand negroes. How that brings peace, no one knows. Maybe it'll help you in 24. But honey, it makes you look like one big whore. We got threats of the world too. Anti-white riots, corona hoax too. And now you're talking just like a Jew, 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 Jew. Let's just kiss and be a mayor too. I'm gonna miss you, I can't lie. The bombing countries make people die.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history or both, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The book delves into a controversial and often overlooked chapter of the American Civil War, specifically focusing on Union war crimes against Southern sympathizers and civilians in occupied Missouri. It centers on the massacre that took place on Christmas Day, 1863, in Ripley County, Missouri, where Union Major James Wilson's 3rd Missouri State Militia Cavalry attacked a gathering of Confederate supporters, including men, women, and children, and the elderly. Lacy aims to shed light on this event known as the Wilson Massacre by presenting a narrative that challenges the conventional historical accounts by providing evidence from local documents, eyewitnesses, newspaper articles, and military records. The book has been praised for its effort to bring forth a nuanced understanding of the brutality of the Civil War in Missouri, emphasizing the need to acknowledge all aspects of this tumultuous period. Lacy's work is commended for its thorough research and commitment to uncovering obscured truths in American history. And you can purchase it at foothillsmedia.net, foothillsmedia.net. To purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.